welcome to another episode of the Stumbled Upon podcast. I am your host, Kate, and each week we will be taking a deep dive into a random topic that has sparked my interest. This week is another meandering topic. So first of all, happy Friday, everybody. I hope that you have had a good week and you are looking forward to the weekend. So like I said, this week is meandering. Okay, so we're going to start with a little bit of a conspiracy theory, and then we're going to end up going into some brain stuff again. I did not intentionally do another brain deep dive. It just kind of ended up that way. So here we are. The spark for this week's episode is from a TikTok that I happened to come across by a creator named Tara Rules. She has some really interesting content, but one of the videos that she posted was about how she was looking up Haas avocados on a Google search, and it corrected her. Google corrected her. She spelled Haas H-A-A-S, and Google corrected her to say it's spelled H-A-S-S. And she was like, wait a minute, I could have sworn it was A-A-S and not A-S-S. So she started looking into it and has come across some conflicting sources. You know, everywhere on Google says that, no, it was named after somebody who had the last name H-A-S-S. And then she found a bunch of recipes and stuff that specify H-A-A-S. I was thinking about it and I was like, huh, I thought it was A-A-S as well. And so that sparked her to be talking about the Mandela effect, and I started thinking about that too, and I'm sure that you have heard of it, and if you have not, it is a phenomenon in which a group of people collectively misremember facts, events, or other details in a consistent manner. The term was actually first coined by a paranormal researcher named Fiona Broom after she discovered that herself and others had strong but inaccurate memories of Nelson Mandela dying in prison in the 80s. He actually died as a free man in 2013 and even served as the president of South Africa from 1994 to 1999. But she was like convinced that he had died in prison and there had been riots and this, that, and the other. And she found that other people had experienced similar incorrect memories. If you look it up, there are several examples of the Mandela effect that are kind of widely known, one of them being the Fruit of the Loom logo. So while we're talking about this stuff, think about what your memories would suggest to you and just see if you notice any kind of discrepancies with your own memories. The Fruit of the Loom logo, there's debate about whether or not there was a cornucopia in it at one point in time. If you go through the research, there is no current evidence that there was ever a cornucopia in their logo. The company themselves have denied ever having a cornucopia in their logo. However, another user on TikTok, and I cannot remember who it was, you should be able to Google it though, she was convinced that there was a cornucopia in their logo. And so she went through all of this research and tried to find all this evidence to point to the fact that at one point there was a cornucopia in the logo. And she discovered that there are two patents on file from the company, one describing a cornucopia and then one for their logos, and then one, or are they patents when they're logos? Maybe copyrights? Whatever. I don't think I'm remembering the term accurately. Maybe the copyright paperwork. Is it a copyright patent? I don't know. It doesn't matter. Gosh. Anyway, she found documentation that said that at one point it describes a cornucopia and then at another point it doesn't. Now, I did do my own research on this, and apparently the filing that specifies the cornucopia expired or something, or was never finished, something to that effect. And so it stands to reason that the company's stance that there has never been a cornucopia in their logo is in fact accurate. However, in this TikTok user's video account, she had somebody from the internet post a photo of an old t-shirt that had the cornucopia stamped in the logo on the t-shirt. Now there's debate as to whether or not this has been photoshopped, of course, because it's the age of the internet and you can't necessarily trust first images that come through on the internet. There's no way of really fact-checking this from what I can see. It's just one of those things where it's kind of like a weird thing, a weird social phenomenon as far as whether or not this really exists or not. Anyway, that's one of the examples that I myself have kind of fallen down the rabbit hole with trying to figure it out. The other examples that they give of the Mandela effect are the spelling of the Berenstain Bears. So if you remember from your childhood, if you are an 80s, 90s baby, and if you ever had the books, the Berenstain Bears, was their last name spelled Stein, like S-T-E-I-N, or Stain, S-T-A-I-N? I remember it with an E, but that's not accurate. So it's supposed to be the Berenstain Bears, but I don't ever remember it being called that. But again, I was like, what, 7 or so when I was looking at, like, had these books. So who knows at this point? We had that whole episode where we talked about memories not being accurate a few episodes ago. So who knows, man? I don't know. It could be Berenstain. It could be Berenstain. I'm not too sure. Additional examples of the Mandela effect include Shazam, a movie starring Sinbad. That doesn't exist. There was a movie called Kazam starring Shaquille O'Neal. And then the Monopoly Man having a monocle was another example that I found as being something that people remember. However, he has never had a monocle. Although an explanation that I did come across for this one could potentially be that the Planters peanut mascot logo thing, he has a monocle and a top hat. So it could be people superimposing one onto the other. Scientists, however, do not really understand why this phenomenon exists. They do agree that it is a real thing, but they don't really know what makes it happen. They have a few different theories, the first of which being that memory is very suggestible. So social media could be perpetuating false memories. Basically, your memories are open to suggestions. So if you have a vague recollection of something and then somebody says, oh, hey, I think it was Stein, not Stain for the spelling, your brain may be like, yeah, I think that's right. So that could be one of the reasons for this. As far as false memories go, scientists have been able to induce memories of committing a crime with test subjects. And in one study, people could not distinguish false from real memories. So your memory is not as infallible as you may think it is. It's pretty easy to manipulate based off of the research that scientists have done. And if you will recall from our memory episode, it is potentially because every time you are remembering something, your brain is actually reforming the proteins that create that memory or make that memory solid in your mind. So it's having to redo that process. And if you're introducing false information that's close enough to what you remember, I could see how it makes sense that it's easy to have these false memories implanted. There is also the factor of confabulation, which is false memories that are generated to compensate for holes in a person's memory. So there may be an event or something from your past that you have a shaky recollection of, and because of that, your brain is trying to fill in the missing information or the gaps in your memory. And that to me makes sense, because that's also something that they have found in the way that we perceive things. So it's one of the reasons why those ink blot tests and stuff, you can see stuff in there, because your brain is always looking for patterns. It's the same reason why you see images in clouds, or, you know, the image of Jesus on toast or whatever it is, because your brain is always trying to pattern recognize, and it's always trying to put things into a way that it will understand. And so you will see things that are not necessarily really there because your brain is trying to put some sort of recognition on what it is that it's looking at, and it will fill in the information that's missing. If you've seen those paragraphs where, like, letters will be missing in the written text, but you can still read the text because enough of the letters are there that your brain just fills in the gaps for you. So it's really interesting how your brains work, or how our brains work, not yours. I have a brain too. The other theory is that it could be an instance of priming. So priming is exposure to a stimulus that directly influences a person's response to a subsequent stimulus. This is something that is often used in marketing, and it's a business practice. For example, if I say the word grass, And then I'm going to list some words after that. And I want you to think about what sticks out to you the most after I've said the word grass, right? Ball, flower, cake, pencil, tree. As you listen to those words, because I've already primed you with the word grass, the words tree and flowers should have jumped out at you. And that is because your brain was already primed to be thinking of things that have to do with like lawns or grass or nature or whatever the case may be. It's a way to get people to come up with a response that is favorable. So they do it a lot with pricing. If you prime somebody's brain with a certain number, then the negotiations typically do not fall far from the number that primed the interaction. So that's why when you are in situations of sales negotiations, it's important to come up with your number first, because it very rarely will deviate significantly from the first number that is given. So just something to think about. And then, of course, the other sort of theories for the Mandela effect that are less scientifically based. I don't know how to say that. That are less scientifically based. But I mean, I don't think they're any less valid just because they're not scientifically based. Because I don't mind entertaining wild possibilities, right? So I have a very logical sort of science-focused mind, I guess. Or I don't know how to say that. I tend to put more emphasis on science-based things, but I also maintain the possibility that there are things out there that we don't understand and science cannot explain, and they're just as valid. So take what I'm going to say with a grain of salt, I guess. Broom, the lady who is the one that created the word Mandela effect, right? She thinks that it occurs when our reality interacts with other alternate realities or parallel universes. And she uses string theory as the basis for this. So I guess it is kind of rooted in science, but it's not really, it's very controversial, right? String theory itself is also very controversial. It's not 100% accepted. So this is sort of the idea that there are hundreds, thousands, millions, whatever, of universes out there that are all running at the same time as ours. She thinks, and others too, think that the Mandela effect is when these universes get too close to each other or interact or cross. There is also a theory that when they started the Large Hadron Collider in 2008 to study the Big Bang, it caused a splinter in time and space, and that is what has caused these Mandela effects to become more widespread and more frequent. Now, this one, I think, is a little bit more far-fetched, but, you know, again, what do I know? I think, though, that it makes sense that you would see an increase in instances of the Mandela effect, not because we turn on the Large Hadron Collider in 2008 and have since seen more instances of this effect. I think it makes more sense to me logically that we are seeing more instances of it these days because we are more socially connected via social media. That's what I think is the explanation for like why the instance of it is rising, is not because, it just makes more sense to me that it's because we're talking to each other more about these things on the internet now than we were previous to 2008. Do you know what I mean? The final theory that I came across was that we are potentially all victims of a large-scale psychological experiment by the United States government. I mean, that could be true too. Like, what do we know? Honestly, things that were labeled as conspiracy theories in the past have since come out as being true once classified government documents have been declassified, has shown that other things in the past that we all thought were conspiracy theories were actually true. So I don't know. It could very well be that case, that it's a big experiment that we're all just test subjects. And if that's the case, I mean, I don't know what the goal of it is, but again, I don't. The government is the government, so who knows? The article that I was reading that was talking about these different theories, or some of these different theories, had a quote by Dr. John Paul Garrison. He is a clinical and forensic psychologist, and he said human memory is imperfect, and unfortunately, the Mandela effect is likely secondary to our flawed retention. If we could find a few people with a photographic memory, that could make for a great experiment, but sadly, that has not been proven to exist in adults. And I read that and was like, what do you mean a photographic memory has not been proven to exist? So I had to go down that rabbit hole as well and kind of figure out what he's talking about. first I started, I just did a Google search on basically like, is photographic memory something that's real? And the definition of a photographic memory is someone that is able to recall visual information in great detail. Just like a photo freezes a moment in time, someone with a photographic memory can take a mental snapshot and then recall the snapshot without error. They basically have said that this ability does not exist. And if you think about it in this way, it kind of makes sense. So if you ask someone who thinks that they have a photographic memory to read 2 to 3 lines of text and then repeat the text in reverse order, they can't do it. So if memory actually worked like a photo, then they would be able to rapidly do this by just reading the photo. And so people can't actually do that. And it's because memory is more like pieces of a jigsaw puzzle rather than a photo. We piece together various remember elements and forget other parts. The reason why this is advantageous is because passing over details helps us form general concepts. We're good at remembering the gist of what happened rather than each specific detail. That's because what's important for memory is the meaning of what was presented, not the exact details at any given time. Now, I'm sure you may have heard of eidetic memory, and a lot of people use that term interchangeably with photographic memory, but there is technically a difference, and it's basically the length of time that you remember this photograph. So eidetic memory is remembered for a shorter period of time than a photographic memory. And eidetic memory is something that is seen in children, but it's not commonly seen in adults at all. And it's possibly because adults rely heavily on language and less on visual spatial memory skills. Having pictures in your brain for remembering things got me thinking about a friend of mine who does not have a mind's eye at all. So there is a condition called aphantasia, and it affects 1-4% of the population. And basically, they don't have the ability to visualize pictures in their head. So it's really fascinating. And he like blew my mind when he told me that it was like this. And actually, what caused him to tell me this was because he would use GPS everywhere he went, even to get back home, like from work to home, he would need to use GPS. And I was like, why do you need GPS to get to someplace that you go to all the time? And he said it's because he doesn't have a map in his mind. He could not like create a map from one location to the next in his brain. And so he relied on GPS to get where he needed to go always. And I found that really interesting. And so that got me thinking, the whole photographic memory thing got me thinking about this. And so I decided to look into it a little bit more. And the term aphantasia was not coined until 2015. And it is the inability to voluntarily produce visual images in one's mind. Now, a way that you can think about this, or you can do a little self-experiment to see how you think of things. So it's called the ball on the table experiment. So visualize a ball on a table. Now imagine someone walks up to the table and pushes the ball. What happens to the ball? So there's a few parts to this. The second part is to answer the following questions. What color was the ball? What gender was the person that pushed the ball? What did they look like? What size was the ball? What did the table look like? The important question is, did you already know the answers to those previous questions? Or did you have to choose a color, gender, size, etc. after being asked about them? If you are a visualizer, which is someone who can see pictures in their head, then you would have had immediate answers to those questions because you picture the scene in your mind. If you are a conceptualizer, which is someone who does not have pictures in their head, you grasp the idea of a ball on a table and you logically know that it will fall when it's pushed, but you don't actually form the picture of the event in your mind because you can't. They do say that the imagination/visualization is on a spectrum. So there are people who have really crisp, very detailed pictures that will form in their mind, all the way down to people who don't form any pictures in their mind. And you fall somewhere along that continuum. There was a team at the University of Bonn that conducted a small study and found that people with aphantasia had more difficulty recalling memories, reporting fewer details, less vivid narratives, and diminished confidence in their own memory. It suggests a close link between our ability to remember and our imagination, which if you think about that, it would make sense. If there's a link between our imagination and our memory, then it also makes sense that there is a really easy way to create false memories because your imagination is not necessarily reliable. Now, this doesn't mean that people with aphantasia cannot remember anything. Their recall is just different. different. My friend described remembering facts rather than seeing the details in his mind. So, for example, he could remember who I was, but he couldn't see my face in his mind when I told him to think about what I looked like. He just knew facts about me. Like, he would say, well, you have light brown hair and blue eyes, but he wouldn't picture my face in his mind, which is just, it's just wild to me to think about. There's also people who, just as another general, like, just as another side note, there's also people that don't have an internal monologue. That's a whole other deep dive to go into. There are people who don't have a running narrative in their mind all the time, like talking in their head, which is also wild to me because I am a visualizer. So I see pictures in my brain and I also have a monologue going on in my brain as well. So that's also why I go down these deep dives, is because my brain is like jumping from one thing to the next thing. And that monologue is like, well, what about this? Or what about that? Or do you remember that? Do you know that? And so it's wild for me to think that there are people that don't have that much clutter in their brain or noise in their brain, maybe. I wonder how calming to not have a voice in your head all the time, or always have pictures in your brain? Is it calming or is it annoying? Or I guess you don't know, because you don't know what it's like to have it the other way either. I don't know. Food for thought. In conclusion, perceptions of events also have an effect. So what you focus on, whether you have aphantasia or not, will reflect itself in what you remember. So it goes back to why you remember certain things, and then people who were involved in the same event will remember completely different things, because it's just like where your focus was when you were in the event or the situation or whatever the case may be. You know, at the end of the day, maybe we are living in a simulation, or maybe there are overlaps with parallel universes, but maybe we're just getting better at detecting our own flaws. Like, that could be it too. It could just be that we are getting smarter and also realizing that we're dumber at the same time. Which is, I think, a completely valid conclusion to reach as well. I was talking about this and I said, the more I learn, the less I know. I think that's the crux of all of this, honestly. At the end of the day, there's still so much that we don't know about our brains and the world around us, and we're trying to understand it, but it can be fun to see the glitches and brainstorm theories about why they exist. And I think that you don't have to take it too seriously, and you can just have fun coming up with ideas about why things are the way that they are. So anyway, after that long and meandering journey that we went on, I hope that you all have a wonderful rest of your day, and I will be seeing you next Friday.